Welcome to the City Club of Eugene February 16th, 2018 program. Cleaner Air Oregon, proposed rules, effect on health and business. I'm Sandra Bishop, City Club President. The Cleaner Air Oregon rulemaking is a partnership between Oregon Health Authority and the Oregon DEQ, the Department of Environmental Quality. It's intended to set health risk limits on pollution that industrial facilities emit. The intention is to develop a new regulatory system for managing air toxics emissions across the state in relation to public health. Technical and advisory stakeholder groups convened in 2016 and have met for 2 years. Now state agencies and the legislature and the Environmental Quality Commission are reviewing these proposed regulations. We invited and tried to have a local business manager or owner who's directly affected by the regulations to speak today, but we were unable to schedule anyone. So we have two speakers today who will be giving us a lot of the background and really educating us on this issue. City Club's support is provided by both the members and sponsors. And I'd like to thank some of the sponsors, including Summit Bank, Oregon Country Fair, Sacred Earth Botanicals, and the University of Oregon Government and Community Relations. And one of our silver sponsors, the law offices of Johnson, Johnson, Lucas, and Middleton, whose mission is to obtain justice and fair compensation for people who've been harmed because of someone's wrongful conduct. More information at justicelawyers.com. And special thanks to PacInfo and Simplified Computing, LLC, and KLCC Radio. City Club programs are broadcast on public radio station KLCC 89.7. I'd like to introduce our speakers today. First, we'll hear from Lisa Arkin. Many of you know Lisa. Lisa is the executive director of Beyond Toxics, an environmental health nonprofit that was founded in 2000. It's registered in Oregon. She's also taught at Stanford University and at the University of Oregon. Lisa is seasoned and consistent in her advocacy for community health and environmental justice. She's managed federal grants for clean air projects and has authored successful legislation and written environmental health assessments. Lisa was appointed to serve on the Cleaner Air Oregon Policy Advisory Committee during 2016-2017 as a representative for the environmental protection sector. And our second speaker today will be Merlin Howe. Merlin is director of the Lane Regional Air Protection Agency, our very own LRAPA. I say he's responsible for the air quality in Lane County, but the agency LRAPA does have jurisdiction throughout Lane County. We thank Merlin for being here today. He's worked as an environmental program manager and a senior environmental engineer for Oregon DEQ in air quality and waste management programs. Merlin is a professional environmental and civil engineer with BS and MS degrees from Oregon State University and the University of Portland. He's also a trustee of the American Academy of Environmental Engineers and Scientists and a fellow of the Air and Waste Management Association. So I'd like to invite Lisa up to start our education. Lisa, thank you.
Thank you very much, Sandra, and thank you, City Club, for having this program on Cleaner Air Oregon. I was asked to speak at City Club today about putting Oregon on a new path towards clean air, public health, and environmental justice. This new path is Cleaner Air Oregon. It's a regulatory overhaul, and this is Governor Brown's mandate to bring Oregon's air regulatory system into the modern era. The governor initiated a decision-making process for clean air, which resulted in 2 years of hard work put in by businesses, big and small, business representatives, regulators, scientists, environmental advocates, and members of impacted communities, all working together to bring forward a new program. The goal was to work collectively using the principles of science-based evidence and technology combined with health-based standards to provide the greatest reduction in health risks to the most impacted neighborhoods in Oregon, while allowing businesses to thrive and grow in our state. On Wednesday of this week, while the state legislature is in session, a lot of that changed when a Senate committee voted to throw out the transparent Cleaner Air Oregon process and approve Senate Bill 1541. According to a front page story in the Oregonian this week, Senate Bill 1541 was crafted in secret and heavily influenced by industry. For example, it doubles the cancer risk from breathing air toxics for all Oregonians. So as it stands right now, the substituted Senate bill has somewhat a diluting effect on the governor's mandate to regulate air pollution based on public health criteria. But they say that making legislation is like making sausage, right? So we'll get back to that later, and I know that Merlin will give you a more in-depth update on this Senate bill as well. So let's first explore why air pollution regulation is so important and why it matters to each and every one of us. So I'm going to ask you to do something with me, both in the room and those of you listening on radio. I'm going to ask us all slowly to take a breath of air. And if you've done your yoga classes or if you're an athlete, you know how to do this. So let's begin. Inhale and slowly exhale. And in that moment, in that breath, you had an intimate exchange between your own biological system and the surrounding environment. As we breathe air deep into our lungs, the particles in that air, whether they be healthy or toxic, move down into the smallest air sacs deep in our lungs. That's the place where the cell membrane is infinitesimally thin. Imagine your lungs looking like an inverted respiratory tree. The ending branches of that tree blossom into little sacs which are wrapped in a fine mesh of capillaries. It is at this miraculous place that nutrients or pollutants in the air pass directly from your lungs into your bloodstream and then are carried to every organ of the body. In other words, each inhalation of air is our most intimate and direct exchange with the environment around us. Breathing toxic air is like injecting pollution right into your veins. As pollution comes into your lungs and passes into our bloodstream and is carried into our organs, it can produce inflammation, oxidative stress. It can increase your potential for cancer and other serious illnesses, including respiratory and circulatory illnesses. This is the reason that Governor Brown's mandate to reduce air toxics happened, because the air we breathe contains invisible chemicals, and they become part of our own bodies. They become part of our internal environment. For a number of the chemicals that would be regulated under Clean Air Oregon, there are no safe levels. There's no safe level of lead exposure. Lead causes irreversible neurological damage to our children. The impetus for Cleaner Air Oregon was the discovery of high levels of heavy metals, such as lead, in the air of residential neighborhoods in Portland. A study of tree moss in Portland conducted by the U.S. Forest Service revealed previously unsuspected high levels of hexavalent chromium, arsenic, cadmium, nickel, and lead in the air surrounding a pair of art glass companies located in residential Portland neighborhoods. This discovery caused a public outcry when residents realized that the localized toxic air pollution was real and scientifically confirmable as a health hazard. So the bullseye art glass situation, as they call it, exposed four big gaps in Oregon's air regulatory system that needed to be fixed. And there's probably more than four, but we have limited time today. So in my mind, the first gap was loopholes. Air permits issued to art glass manufacturers were insufficient to regulate heavy metals and were subsequently updated in our state. The second gap was backlogs. Oregon's air toxic regulation policies were outdated, and there was a backlog of updating air pollution permits. So dozens of permits were expired, and industries throughout the state were operating on a defunct air quality permit and were not being inspected for compliance. Third, there was a lack of data. Oregon's rules did not require air monitoring to assess dangerous levels of air toxics, and nor were industries required to report the chemicals they emit into the air. And here in Eugene, we're sort of used to businesses reporting chemicals because we have the Eugene Toxics Right to Know program. But that's not true for other areas of the state. Also, the bullseye art glass situation revealed that our air quality rules were not health-based. In other words, agencies are not required to consider necessarily the risk of cancer or developing chronic diseases such as asthma, heart disease, while people breathe toxics at school, at work, and at home. So that was the impetus for Governor Brown launching the Cleaner Air Oregon Initiative to overhaul industrial air toxics. And in 2016, the Oregon Health Authority and the Department of Environmental Quality were told to start up a rulemaking process to bring Oregon's air toxics rules into the modern era and up to the standards in already 25 other states who have updated their air quality rules. And the main point was to propose human health-based rules for industrial polluters. And it began with starting a technical advisory committee, and this was a group of scientists and technical experts and industry representatives who worked through the science and the technology of the air regulations and suggested improvements that Oregon could make and compared Oregon to six other model states. And they concluded that the air pollution permits should incorporate benchmarks for cancer and serious diseases. Then another 18 months ensued where we devoted ourselves to policy development and public input. So representing Beyond Toxics, I served as a governor appointee of the 23-member Cleaner Air Oregon Policy and Rules Advisory Committee. And members included folks from the regulated industry, small business owners, business associations, environmental advocates, and local governments, including Lane County's Commissioner Jay Bozovich. We met for 7-day-long meetings to learn about the range of air pollutants facing Oregonians and what other states are doing to reduce risk from those air pollutants. We were asked to submit extensive comments after each of these meetings and listen to public input about what's going on in Oregon, our air, and our rules. And this process was thorough, it was robust, and it was completely open to the public every step of the way. And I traveled from Medford to the Dalles and all points in between, listening to public comment, going to public hearings and things like that that were led by the DEQ and the Oregon Health Authority. So let's go back just for a moment and remind ourselves what's at stake. Well, the World Health Organization published research showing that 24% of all preventable diseases are caused by environmental pollution. Again, what's in the environment becomes part of our own systems. And the prestigious medical journal, The Lancet, stated that more people have died across the world from pollution-triggered diseases than all the dead from all the wars. That's pretty staggering. So, because of serious health impacts and the obsolete state of Oregon's air quality laws, CAO, or Cleaner Air Oregon, was instituted to come up with a flexible and balanced plan to protect public health and our economy. Four main components of Cleaner Air Oregon, and again, there's plenty that could be said, and I know Merlin will take you through some more details, and I'm grateful that Merlin is here to do that. But again, in my opinion, four main components are that this is a fee-based program, and reasonable fees will be paid by polluters to make sure the program has the money it needs to go forward. It also establishes an inventory of 601 air toxic chemicals to track in this process. It used to be 52, so that's a big improvement. And this inventory will now give us the data we need to understand what chemicals and how much of those chemicals are going into our air. Third, it sets health protection levels. These are called risk action levels, and those are applied to 260 air toxic pollutants. And these health benchmarks would be used to help determine cancer risk and risk from other serious diseases from each facility that will receive an air quality permit. It will also bring companies into the program over an extended period of time, so there's some certainty there. Industries that have low emissions would not be required to take additional action to reduce pollution, but however, the industries with pollution that contributes to elevated cancer or other diseases would need to go through a permitting process that will require steps to reduce pollution. Cleaner Air Oregon really aligns us with dozens of other states. And although the industry might call this a regulatory overreach, this program is not novel and is not untested. Washington, California, and as I said, dozens of other states have science-based air toxic regulations that protect health, like the proposed Cleaner Air Oregon rules. Many Oregon industries operate additional facilities in other states that have already adopted health-based standards. For example, Washington forest product companies have expanded their operations and operate their facilities under Washington's robust air toxic program. So in the midst of all this planning came the surprise legislative action this week on Senate Bill 1541. It's completely separate than this two-year process I've just described, and it's a legislative solution rather than a scientific or health-based approach. And compared to DEQ's original plan, the industry-led proposal increases the chance that Oregonians will get cancer simply from breathing the air every day. The positive part of Senate Bill 1541 is that it does uphold the model that an air permit program should be fee-based and that those fees should be paid by polluting industries and not the public. The problem with the bill, as I see it, is that it does increase dangerously unprotective levels of additional excess cancers in our communities, as well as other non-cancer but serious diseases. And it allows industries to pollute up to a higher level than we had anticipated before they're required to take steps to reduce their air pollution. The bill also severely limits how Oregonians affected by air toxics might be able to file a civil action against harm from pollution. But the bill has passed just one committee in the Senate, and it has not been introduced in the House, and it has yet to make its way through the gauntlet of other committees and make its way to the floor, and so we'll be seeing how this bill develops. And the effort is to get it, of course, to a bipartisan approval. So in closing, every year, research demonstrates that air toxics, such as lead, bioaccumulate in the bodies of children and all of us, and affects, especially for children, their brain development, their organs, and the quality of their lives. These negative impacts can be passed along through to future generations. And every year, more of us know and love people who have died from cancer, and the rate of cancer deaths is increasing exponentially. There should be no number of cancers and diseases decided by the legislature that ties the hands of health experts to be more protective when necessary. Children need adults to protect them. Children don't create their environment. We create the environment that they develop in. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sandra and Lisa. I'm Merlin Huff with Lane Regional Air Protection Agency. Lisa and I met recently on this subject with a committee of the Eugene Chamber of Commerce. At its previous meeting, the committee had heard from businesses about their concerns about Cleaner Air Oregon, so we were expecting some difficult questions. Even so, we weren't prepared for the icebreaker question. As everyone introduced themselves around the table, share a memorable example of your teenage rebellion. Talk about up close and personal. To help clarify that discussion, I was asked to put the Cleaner Air Oregon and other air quality legislation in perspective. And I'll do that here just to give us all a framework to fit some of the things that Lisa has discussed. The first category is criteria pollutants, such as particulate matter and ozone. Those have been regulated since 1970. The second category is air toxics. Those have been regulated mostly since 1990, and Cleaner Air Oregon fits within that category. The third category is greenhouse gases, and they've been subject to regulation only since about 2009, at least at the federal level. The Clean Energy Jobs Bill, that's also known as Cap and Trade or Cap and Invest, that bill fits within this category. So that first category is criteria pollutants, the six pollutants, especially particulate matter and ozone, which were the primary focus of the 1970 and the 1977 Federal Clean Air Acts. The six pollutants had known health effects, they could be easily measured, and the expectation was that if we were successful in reducing those six air pollutants, that overall air quality, including many things that we were not measuring, would significantly improve into the future. The second category is air toxics or hazardous air pollutants. A major section of the 1990 Clean Air Act addressed 187 air toxics. EPA was required to prioritize the industrial sectors and systematically identify the best controlled 12% of those facilities within each sector, then adopt technology standard based on that best 12% and establish a three-year deadline for everyone else to meet those standards. And so that's been the focus of EPA over almost the last 30 years. Cleaner Air Oregon, as Lisa mentioned, would complement that EPA technology-based air toxics program by adding an overlay of risk assessment in the communities around major industrial sources of air toxics. New industries and the largest existing industries would be required to demonstrate that the air toxics risks in the nearby neighborhoods would be within specified limits. The third category regarding greenhouse gases, global warming and climate change, is the most recent of the categories. In April 2007, the U.S. Supreme Court issued its decision in Massachusetts versus EPA, ordered EPA to determine whether greenhouse gases constituted a threat to the public. EPA completed that endangerment finding in 2009, concluding that it did represent a threat. So the carbon cap and trade bill or the clean energy jobs bill, that fits, things like the clean power plan, fuel economy standards for new motor vehicles, they're all part of that third category to reduce greenhouse gases. So to just to summarize, for the last 50 years, we've been working on criteria pollutants like particulate matter and ozone. For the last 30 years, we've been working on air toxics. and only about the last 10 years has been the primary focus on greenhouse gases. Whenever possible, we at El Rapid try to combine the benefits of two or three of these categories in our strategies. For example, our work up in Oak Ridge was designed primarily to reduce particulate pollution to meet the health standards for particulate matter, but along the way, we knew that it would also significantly reduce air toxics from wood stove smoke. Another example is our promotion of electric or zero emission vehicles. That program has the potential to reduce all three categories: criteria pollutants like carbon monoxide and ozone precursors, air toxics like benzene and diesel particulate matter, and carbon dioxide, a greenhouse gas. So Cleaner Oregon fits within that second category, and that's what I'll focus on, which has primarily been the focus since 1990. The Cleaner Air Oregon rules, like Lisa outlined, would set health risk limits on pollutants that industrial facilities emit so that neighbors are protected from potentially harmful levels of exposure. This is a valuable addition to the air toxics program. But it's also important to recognize that the major air toxics risks in Lane County are from residential wood burning and motor vehicles. The air toxics risks from industrial facilities have been reduced significantly since 1990 and are much lower risk than from wood stoves, cars, and trucks. The as Lisa mentioned, Governor Brown directed the Cleaner Air Oregon initiative in 2016, and it represents an unprecedented level of public engagement over the past 2 years. The three things that I'd like to summarize from that are what the DEQ has referred to as the three R's. It would help close the gaps in air toxics by more reporting of air toxics, the 600 air toxics, risk assessments, the second R, and setting risk limits for some subset of that, perhaps about 260 of those industrial air toxics. Requiring industries to calculate the risks of their emissions to the people that live nearby. And the third R is to reduce risk. At certain levels, air toxics would need to be further removed if they were causing high risk in their neighborhoods. So then to implement this, it's recognized that DEQ would require authority from the Oregon legislature for funding and for staff. There were two bills introduced. There's House Bill 4002 and also Senate Bill 1508 that were submitted in order to provide those resources. But there was an additional bill, Senate Bill 1541. It was submitted by Senator Fred Girard that was based on business concerns to set some policy constraints or sideboards on those risk action levels, the hazard indices, and other requirements that could be adopted by the Environmental Quality Commission and implemented by DEQ. After significant revision and compromise, the bill was passed unanimously on Wednesday afternoon by the Senate Environment and Natural Resources Committee. The Dash 2 amendments address the business concerns to provide more certainty and clarity. It provides the resources for DEQ to implement the Cleaner Air Oregon program, but significantly relaxes the requirements for existing industries. It retains the risk action level of 10, that's 10 in a million, and hazard index of 1 for new facilities. So that hasn't been questioned or challenged, that remains. But it relaxes the risk action level for existing industries from 25 in a million to 50 in a million, and the hazard index from 1 to 5. I won't go into what the hazard index is, but it talks about non-cancer effects, whereas the risk action levels talk about cancer effects. The committee approved Senate Bill 1541, the Dash 2 amendments, and specifies that a major industry already in compliance with the EPA air toxics technology requirements is deemed to meet the Oregon requirements for toxics best available control technology, or what's referred to as TBACT, with very limited exceptions. So what's my perspective on Senate Bill 1541? Lisa and I occasionally agree to disagree, so I'm not sure that I'm reflecting her views. Probably not. On the negative side, we probably do agree. I'm disappointed that the Senate Environment and Natural Resources Committee is restricting the future options of the Environmental Quality Commission. As more information on specific air toxics is known, I would have preferred that EQC have more latitude to respond. I'm also disappointed with the less protective risk action level and hazard index for existing industries. But I'm a half full glass of water sort of person. So on the positive side, I'm encouraged by the unanimous bipartisan vote by the Senate Environment and Natural Resources Committee, which should increase the probability of success on the Senate floor and in the Joint Ways and Means Committee. It adds certainty and clarity to address the major business concerns, and it provides adequate resources for DEQ to effectively implement Cleaner Air Oregon. It moves Oregon forward to fill the gaps in the air toxics program to better reporting of air toxics, better risk assessments, and reduction of risk if those risk assessments indicate problems. So overall, I'm encouraged by this progress. By filling these three gaps now, we'll have better information on which to base future improvements to Cleaner Air Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Now we'll take about a 5-minute break to formulate questions from around each table and then return with audience questions. Remember, only City Club members are allowed to ask questions at the mic. And our new executive director's in the back. If you're not a member, you want to ask a question, you can sign up today to be a member. So we'll be back in about 5 minutes. Thank you.
You're listening to KLCC, informing and inspiring listeners for more than a half century. Broadcasting in HD at KLCC Eugene 89.7, KLCO Newport 90.5, KLFR Reedsport 89.1, and at 88.1 KLFO Florence, KMPQ Roseburg, and KLBR Bend. You can find us online at klcc.org. KLCC is a service of Lane Community College.
Welcome back to the February 16th, 2018 City Club program. Cleaner Air Oregon proposed rules, effect on health and business. City Club is a nonprofit organization. Support for City Club is provided by our members and sponsors, including Summit Bank, Oregon Country Fair, Sacred Earth Botanicals, UO Government and Community Relations, and the law offices of Johnson, Lucas, and Middleton. And special thanks to our in-kind sponsors, University of Oregon, Academic Extension, Dot Dotson's Photography, and KRVM 91.9 Radio. Before we go to questions, please remember to keep your questions short and to the point. And I want to also say we have with us today Mike Fries to help, time's not up quite yet. Mike Fries is going to help us to have a perspective from the point of view of business and industry if that comes up in the questions. And then Lisa and Merlin to answer questions as well. So please, first question.
I'm Paul Thompson, a City Club member for some period of time now. This is a question for Mark Fries. What's your take on Senate Bill 1541?
Mike Fries, yeah, but introduce yourself, Mike.
But my brother's name's Mark, so my parents oftentimes would get our names confused, so I still answer to Mark. Yes, thank you so much for having me here. I apologize. I often work in Salem, and so on Fridays and in session, it's usually unclear whether or not I can make a trip outside of Salem, so I'm always happy to make the drive. Senate Bill 1541, and actually I want to say you know, Lisa and I, we were able to spend a lot of time on the Rules Advisory Committee, and I have never participated in a rulemaking quite like it. The agency, I thought, did quite a spectacular job trying to walk a number of us, 24, through a very complex topic. There's very few things more complex than air toxics regulation when you talk about environmental regulation. And so trying to get this group of many of us novices about this topic and how it works and how other states regulate was quite an undertaking. And I must say that the Oregon Health Authority and Oregon DEQ did about as good a job as I could imagine anybody able to do when you're trying to bring a group of folks along. So last session, so in 2017, the legislature was asked to fund or provide some seed funding for the program, and it failed. And there were a number of reasons for that. There's some real turmoil at DEQ. There were changes at the leadership level of DEQ, and ultimately, through various issues, caused the legislature to say, you know what, we're not ready to fund your program. Coming into this session, there was the proposed rule that went out for public comment. Legislators were hearing from their constituencies all over the state. DEQ had a number of meetings, and frankly, there was a continued angst about the program and whether it should move forward. So,
Mike, could you talk about the Senate bill specifically?
Yes,
yeah, so I mean the House bill.
Yeah, so Senate bill. So the Senate bill is a. What happened was some legislators said, we need to figure out how to fund the program. Let's figure out how to do that in a bipartisan way. So the Senate bill was introduced. It had it was by Senator Drodd, but it had three other co-sponsors, both Democrat and Republican. And the idea was, can we sit Oregon DEQ, Oregon Health Authority, and those with concerns around a table and see if we can find a path forward to get it funded this session. And that was the product of Senate Bill 1541. It looks that with the dash twos, it looks a lot different than it did with the previous version. And it does. It changes the benchmarks, and it also adds a new program element that no other state has, and that's a pilot program. So that if you're a facility, and DEQ has to identify the area, but if you're a facility within this area and you want to expand and you want to increase risk, you have to find another place to offset that risk. This was an intriguing concept for many legislators. It also used the same data, the same science that DEQ arrived at the policy positions around what benchmarks to set it at and how to assess risk. But legislators who, you know, both Democrats and Republicans from across the state who have developed a relationship where they trust one another said, listen, jobs are also important in my community. I want to make sure that we do this thing right. We're hearing from employees. We're hearing from employers. And so let's set these things at a level where we think truly represents a health protective standard, like more protective, in fact, than most other states. And one that we know businesses can not only meet, but also help reduce risk by not leaving, but actually providing improved technologies to reduce risk in communities. And I think for all the other things that Merlin laid out, it keeps that framework alive so that we know what pollution's happening in the communities. And we also know how we can talk about it with neighbors, communities, and employees. So I think it was a great product. I think many of us were happy to see that Republicans and Democrats could get behind this concept and move it forward, which I think is going to be better for Oregon.
Great. Thank you very much.
I'm Catherine Schott, City Club board member. I have an air quality question, so I'll address it to Merlin. It goes like this. There appears to be more construction of homes next to freeways. Certainly this is true of Coburg. Is there data available regarding the impact of pollution from automobiles, folks living near the freeways?
That's a good question. There's been a focus here in recent years of near roadway monitoring, and each metropolitan area, I believe the criteria is a million or more. So Portland, there's a new site up there in the Portland area in order to help quantify that. But across the country, a similar monitoring to do that. Fortunately, since 1960s, there's been a steady progression in cleaner vehicles. and cleaner fuels. It used to be we had very clear health problems with lead levels that were almost entirely due to leaded gasoline. By the mid-70s with catalytic converters, in order to keep from poisoning those very effective pollution control devices, lead had to be banned. So for a long time, we had no lead gasoline for vehicles that were mid-70s or newer. Eventually, it got to the point where all leaded gasoline was prohibited. But there's also environmental justice issues when you start talking about near roadways in major urban areas. Frequently, there's lower income areas that are of concern for environmental justice, and that's part of the near roadway monitoring requirements.
Jerry Smith, City Club member since 2003. Were the human rights considered particularly public health? The city of Eugene just declared climate change the biggest air pollution thing to be a matter of human rights. Does El Rapa look, does it measure the sickness that's being brought about by the increased pollution allowances that are coming through?
Very, very important issue. The Federal Clean Air Act gives a primary responsibility for setting health standards to Environmental Protection Agency. In order to do that, Congress established what's called the Clean Air Scientific Advisory Committee. That's a group made up of scientists and medical professionals that gives advice to EPA. It's still the EPA administrator that's responsible to set those standards. Those standards have been tightened a number of times since 1970. Particulate matter used to be just total particulate, and then it was realized that from health studies that it's the smaller particles, so particulate matter that was 10 microns or smaller in size, and then a lower mass numbers to go along with that. More recently, in the 1990s, that changed to particulate matter that's 2.5 microns, even smaller in size, is the greatest health concern. And then that standard was, the numbers of that were tightened in 2006. So there has been that progressive tightening of standards, and that establishes our target that El Rapa then designed strategies working with communities to meet. And it establishes, there's deadlines that go along with that. If there's a new tightening of a standard, it's about a 5-year process to get the plan developed, adopted, get it implemented, and then demonstrate that you can meet the new tighter standards. But that is those air quality health standards are the framework that a lot of these other things plug into.
And I'm Jack Dresser. It seems that in order to influence the industry protective legislators, statement that Lisa made about the death rate attributable to pollution is pretty dramatic. And so I'm wondering, and that would be very persuasive, I would think. So I'm wondering how that rate is calculated and then how it can be communicated to both legislators and the voting public.
Well, I'm not sure I'm going to have an answer for that question, but maybe an illustrative example. Mike had mentioned that businesses and workers had communicated to their elected representatives some concern about the Cleaner Air Oregon process, and they were making their voices heard. Well, what voices are not heard? That's really the question, and how do we get those voices heard? So, for example, and Mike will remember, in our Cleaner Air Oregon Advisory Committee meetings, we heard from teenagers from Lentz in southeast Portland who have severe asthma. This was a young woman, a young African-American woman who can't go out and join a team to play after school, has trouble even walking home because of asthma. And yeah, she talked to us, the advisors, but not the decision makers, but chances are she can't go to Salem and tell her story. And so oftentimes at the level of the legislature, we're only hearing a very little bit of what needs to be heard to influence our state legislators. I know Beyond Toxics worked very, very hard to make sure that environmental justice principles are upheld. So, for example, we put a lot of comment into agencies to hold public hearings at night when people are done with school and done with work, or on the weekends to make sure there are translators there, to make sure more voices are being heard. And so it's not a magic bullet to answer your question, but it's more voices need to be at the table. And I believe that's the consternation with Senate Bill 1541 is what happened to most of the voices who really care deeply about our air quality.
Thank you. Next question, please.
David Edrington, City Club member. From the point of view of regulation or legislation, how do your two organizations treat pollen from industrial agricultural operations?
We're fortunate to have regular pollen monitoring here in the Eugene area, and you probably are aware that we have some of the highest levels measured any place here. Pollen itself is not part of the authority or responsibility that DEQ or LRAPA have. We know that people are impacted by it, but it's not, other than what it contributes to the total particulate matter, it's not, doesn't factor into our requirements. It's kind of its own world, and for people allergic, people sensitive, it's kind of like another world, just like smoking. I mean, if somebody is a smoker, you probably don't care about our air quality standards, because you're subjecting yourself to so much higher impacts than that. Similarly, someone that's sensitive to pollen is going to be much more dramatically impacted by that than they probably would even by general Beijing air quality, because it can have dramatic effects.
Thank you. Oh, Lisa, go ahead.
I would just say pollen is part of nature. And yes, we live in a valley that has a lot of agriculture, and so we might get pollen from agricultural products, but I used to live in the South, and boy, when was the cottonwood trees go? Woo! Pollen everywhere. It's part of nature.
Thank you.
Bob Cassidy, City Club member. Merlin, you said that the Bill 1541 would grandfather out the older businesses, and the new businesses would be affected by the new regulations. Is that going to be a cost, significant cost, for new businesses coming in?
There is a distinction in the bill, also in the proposals that came out of the Rulemaking Advisory Committee. There is a distinction between new and existing industries. The concept is that for a new industry, it can be designed to be much more rigorous pollution control equipment. You can address it on the front end. If it's an existing source, sometimes it's much more expensive to retrofit an existing industry. And so the numbers are different. So they're not really grandfathering in. They're just recognizing different standards for new and existing, tighter standards for new than existing. And then there was some difference there from the proposal, which was a risk action level of 25 in a million, for example. That was changed to 50. If you look across the country, other states, the range is basically from 10 to 100. And down in the biggest districts in California, they're more in the 10 to 25 range for existing industries. Across the country, though, it's probably the full range of 10 to 100. 100 is the level that EPA uses as part of their technology review. Another step they have to do is called risk and technology review, or RTR. And what they do there is look at the affected industries. They look if there's new technologies that have come online that are applicable, and they look at whether the risk after employing the current standards is above that 100 in a million level. So
you know, for existing industries, basically it is a different standard, just because it recognizes it's not as straightforward to do a retrofit as it would be if you're designing from the ground up.
Camilla Pratt, City Club member. As an ordinary air breather, what would be the most effective thing we could do to report a situation that we realize is an air pollution problem?
We at LRAPA get a wide variety of complaints each year. I believe it's currently about 700 per year. That some of those are regarding outdoor burning, some of those are from homewood heating, some of those are from forest slash burning, some of those are from industry. Here recently, our miscellaneous category includes a lot of things related to marijuana odors. And so we try to respond. We don't always have authority to respond. In the case of marijuana, it's categorized as agriculture in Oregon. Our requirements are, don't apply to that. We do what we can to respond and get people plugged into OLCC or land use authorities or whatever the appropriate one is. But there's about 700 of those a year. Those have come down over time. Most of those are declining or low, most of those categories. The two exceptions are outdoor burning and homewood heating, and so that's been the focus of our Citizens Advisory Committee this past couple years. Several years ago, well, I guess it's been a decade or more now, we had substantially more because it included field burning complaints. When the legislature essentially banned that in 2009, that had a dramatic effect on the number of air pollution complaints we receive at our office. So we welcome those complaints, we document them. Even if they're not directly in our responsibility, we'll either direct those to the right people or advise the complainant who the right person or agency is to talk about that.
Lisa would also like to comment on that question as well.
And everything Merlin said is absolutely true. And in addition, you have a environmental health nonprofit right in your midst. We're often seen as a watchdog organization. So if you're not getting satisfaction, come see us at Beyond Toxics, call us. Mentioning field burning, for example, we were the organization to first introduce that bill in the legislature because communities came to us because they weren't seeing action from elected officials. So we're always there to help as well, and we try to work with LRAPA and or nudge them and poke them in the ribs.
Thank you. We have only about 3 or 4 minutes for questions left, so please go ahead.
Hello, my name is Ephraim Payne. I'm also representing Beyond Toxics.
Are you a City Club member?
I was told that we are a member, so I'm speaking
great.
On behalf
Perfect.
Of Beyond Toxics.
Perfect.
So unfortunately, we know that the health risks of environmental pollutants are not shared equally. Low-income communities, communities of color, immigrant communities face these risks at a much greater degree because industry is often sited adjacent to or within their neighborhoods. So my question is, when there was a decision to reduce risk standards for existing facilities in Oregon, were the unequal burdens that frontline communities have to face, were those considered? Were the health risks that people living right next to or in close proximity to these facilities that we're talking to, were their health risks especially considered? And as Lisa said, were their voices asked to be part of that new and separate rulemaking process?
And who would you like to address your question to?
Any three of you who have a piece of that answer.
Okay, great. Thanks.
I'll start. So as I mentioned, their voices were not heard in the crafting of Senate Bill 1541. The original Cleaner Air Oregon proposed policy that the DEQ and the OHA put forward to be considered by the Environmental Quality Commission has a strong environmental justice component. In fact, that's something that we're very proud of. It's not really in Senate Bill 1541, and there is doubt. We don't know how it's going to be implemented, whether the EQC still has the ability to place that component into the final rule. And that component would require polluting industry whose level of pollution is determined to exceed the benchmarks, they would have to work with the downwind community, the impacted community, through meetings and information sharing and making sure their voices are heard before a permit is issued. So that is up in the air right now, and I know we're out of time, so I'll stop there.
One thing to point out is that this new program, Cleaner Air Oregon, whether as originally proposed, as passed by this committee, it's not reducing program. This is helping to fill the gaps that have been recognized. It overlays a risk assessment process on the existing technology-based requirements. But there is a key part of this that's focused on a geographic area that will probably be up in the Portland area, and it will look at not just the effects of an individual industry, but also the cumulative effect of multiple industries in that area. And the selection of that area, environmental justice is one of those key considerations of which area is chosen for that special geographic pilot program.
Great, thank you. We have just barely time for one more question.
Ralph Pledger, member for about 2 years. I wonder why Oregon doesn't have statewide vehicle emissions periodic testing. I've lived in other states that have that.
Well, thank you for that question. Portland and Medford areas of Oregon are the two areas that require that, and it was required in order to meet Clean Air Act standards for carbon monoxide or ozone or both by deadlines in the Clean Air Act. The authority to do those programs is established by the legislature, and you have to have a problem of that significance in order for it to be authorized. The key thing that makes it work in Oregon is it's tied into the DMV registration. That's the most efficient way to enforce a program of that kind, and so it does require legislative approval to do that, and you have to be able to pass those thresholds. Fortunately, here in Eugene, we were able to meet standards by 1982 without implementing that program. Medford was not able to even meet the 1987, which was the five-year extension of that deadline, and so I happened to be involved with working on that strategy and going to the legislature and asking the legislature to approve that program in the Medford area back in the mid-1980s. Portland's program has been in effect since early 70s, one of the earliest programs in the country. But there hasn't been, we don't meet the threshold in the rest of the state to have those programs.
Great, thank you. Perfect timing. Before we thank our speakers today, there are a couple of quick announcements. We want to thank public radio station KLCC 89.7 for airing City Club programs on Monday at 6:30 p.m. And please join us for next week's program, Friday, February 23rd. The program is Eugene as a Gigabit City, Mozilla Grantee Showcase. More details and information about that program and other future programs can be found online at the City Club's website, cityclubofeugene.org. Now let's thank today's speakers, Merlin Huff, Lisa Arkin, and thank you to Mike Fries for coming down. Thank you very much. Thank you. That concludes today's program.